come in order. We have present before us Representatives Corey, Salmon, Co-Chairs Elkins, Co-Chair Gatto. Two bills today. First we'll deal with Senate Bill 304, which is otherwise known as Airport Parking Bill. And then following that, we'll...
I got this from Mark. I don't know where he's at.
Oh, okay. Following that, we'll deal with the Anchorage Signal Upgrade, House Bill 397, which is an appropriations bill. Where we stood on this before, we had public testimony, but we have before us an amendment from the sponsor. So would you like to come and speak to amendment number one? First of all, we need somebody to move amendment number one.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move amendment number one.
Without an objection, we have amendment number one before us. Identify name and affiliation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ryan McKinster from Senator John Cowdery's office, and I'm carrying this bill on behalf of the Senate Transportation Committee. Basically, the amendment before you, as some of you remember from the last meeting, an issue was brought up that this bill overall removes the ability to charge percent of gross revenue for off-airport establishments. Obviously, on-airport are exempt from this. They have a lease agreement with the airport. But it was brought to our attention by the airport and by some on-air rental agencies that this has a far-reaching effect and actually affects current rates that are already there. Off-airport rental facilities already pay 8% of gross revenue, and that's been in place for a couple years now. So if we adopt this without any amendment, we'd be basically reversing a fee that has been standing and been accepted by that group of business people. So basically what this amendment does, it keeps the intent of the bill together, but it says anybody before January 1st that had an agreement off air that was charged gross revenue, percent of gross revenue, they can still be charged on the old system that's been in place and they've obviously been comfortable with for a certain amount of time. But it says other companies such as off airport parking or any new businesses that may come on that use the facilities of the state airport cannot be charged percent of gross revenue for access to the airport.
Does it kind of default to some other system, or is it any system that's negotiated?
Mr. Chair, basically right now it's kind of defaulting what system they're working on. Right now they have a fee schedule. We're not dictating necessarily the fee schedule or system that the airport has. We're just saying unless you're a small group, you're on air, or you're currently be charged gross revenue, you won't be charged by that computational method. We're not putting a limit on prices, what the fees are, what they may be. That's been up to the discretion of the department before, and we're not changing that. We're just saying you cannot go into a private entity's books to fulfill the obligation to decide fees.
Okay. Would any system they have that pertains to, if they had percent of gross revenue, would that have to be across the board? For concessions, for parking, for taxis, for vans, for anything?
Mr. Chairman, no. Actually, it's for similar services, especially how the statute states, and there's actually been case law, I believe, in other states, not necessarily here, but those actually point to the fact that they're dissimilar services. They're receiving a different privilege depending on the different service group. So a rental car agency would, in fact, be different than a shuttle agency. And as the fee schedule shows, they do charge different rates, per car rates for the off-airport businesses currently. But it's defined by similar types of businesses, how it's usually defined.
Okay. Any questions for the bill carrier? Seeing none, we'll go to testimony. We have Dan Coffey. Dan, are you online?
Yeah, I'm here. Hi.
How would you like an opportunity to testify?
Well, I just give you my brief history on this matter and on my prior ownership as owner of Dollar Rent-A-Car. We sold...
All right, Dan, just a second. I need you to identify your name and any affiliation you have.
I'm Dan Coffey, and I'm the attorney for Diamond Parking.
Okay, that helps. Go ahead.
All right, thank you, sir. I'm sorry for that. I used to own Dollar Rent-A-Car until December 9th of last year, 05. We sold it to Thrifty. We've also fought the fight about imposing a gross receipts tax when I was an off-airport operator, and the previous legislature wouldn't allow them to do that at that time. But when we got on airport, they subsequently changed their, or reinstituted it, and of course, being on airport, we had no reason to fight it. I don't care whether the car rental companies remain in or out of this bill. That's not the the point of what we're trying to do. But I do want to say this. As a prior car rental company owner, the idea that somehow Dollar, Hertz, Avis, Thrifty, Budget, and these large car companies, car rental companies, which are obligated by their franchise agreements to be on the airport, are somehow going to flee the airport if we stop charging a $250 or small percentage fee to off-airport operators, just strikes me as they're trying to blow smoke at you, sir. That's what I'm afraid. But more on the merits of the diamond parking thing. What we're trying to accomplish here is have a reasonable and appropriate fee for using the curb service applicable to those of us who are operators of shuttle companies, and there's a variety of them, be they hotel operators or tour companies or diamond parking or others. And what the airport has tried to do is basically hit diamond parking with an 8% of their gross receipts levy, which, by the way, would exceed $108,000 a year in revenue. And it's basically, we believe currently it's contradictory to existing law, which talks about fees and services being reasonably related to the use of the airport. When I talk to the airport, they tell me, well, if it wasn't for the airport, you wouldn't have a business. Therefore, you're really using all of the airport because that's where passengers land and so on. But I think that's a disingenuous argument. And so what we're looking for and what we've offered many, many times in the past with the airport is set the fees commensurate with the use. Set them consistent for all of the shuttle companies and have it be a permit or have it be a per trip or a per head cost, whatever you want, but don't be seeking to tax us with a percentage of the gross revenue.
Dan, let me ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
Is diamond parking on airport property?
No, sir.
Okay, so they're on private property. Second question would be, well, I lost track myself, but it had to do with the access to the client base. The airport,
yes,
the airport makes a good argument that no airport, you don't have a client base there, and you wouldn't even be in business.
Well, you could extend that to the hotels. You could extend it to a lot of other businesses which are dependent upon travelers coming to Alaska.
Good point. Do they have any relationship with the hotels besides just the van going back and forth?
You mean, does the airport have a relationship with them?
Correct.
Not that I'm aware of. They charge them a flat fee for shuttling their customers to and from. It's an annual fee.
But they don't get a bed tax or any part of the bed tax?
No, the Anchorage bed tax is, of course, you know, we're trying to get money out of the state, not give it to the state airport. So we keep all the bed tax for the citizens of Anchorage. The part of the problem is compounded, if I might. It's compounded by the fact that when Diamond Parking comes in, they offer very good service, you know, portal to portal. They meet you at your car and stuff. And the airport has not been willing to create a system out there that would effectively compete with Diamond. They should have a competitive advantage. They're closer and so on and so forth, but they're not. Instead, they've sought to impose this, we call it a tax, a gross receipts tax, on an off-airport enterprise. And frankly, Diamond Parking is the only one that they've addressed this to. So it's really kind of like, let's get the money back we lost from competition out of the private sector, and as opposed to trying to make their on-airport parking a much better operation, which would include shuttle service from the long-term parking lots and a whole bunch of other things they could do. One other point, if I might, Diamond Parking has offered per capita, per head, per trip, and has offered to pay for and install systems that are used at other airports around the country for counting per trips automatically. And all of these proposals were turned down. So we've gotten nowhere. We're at loggerheads with this idea of a gross receipts tax versus a permit or per trip tax, and there we are.
Okay. Is there anything good that you can say about the airport in that this is something? I'll give you an example. Right now they're building the airport facility,
yes,
for rental cars, so that,
yes,
the rental cars will all be indoors. They'll be serviced on site rather than off site.
Oh, yes, sir.
And so they're doing something. You see in the future possibly that there'll be a better competitor against Diamond Parking?
Well, that's more up to Mr. Plum and the airport, but I was intimately involved with the airport on-airport parking garage for a period of 5 years, and the airport was very receptive to that, and the car rental companies agreed to, you know, impose a fee on themselves to pay for it, and in that respect, I can say lots of very good things about the airport. But one of the things that bothers me is I've heard the testimony that somehow these major car companies will flee the airport if we don't continue to tax these off-airport operations, these small car rental companies that, you know, Rent-A-Wreck and Affordable and these ones that are, you know, they've got 1% market share. These big companies aren't going to leave the airport. So frankly, I'm a bit mystified why we're at this point when so many alternative solutions have been offered to a gross receipts tax. It's just a mystery to me why they're stuck on it. And their arguments are really problematic. They are the but for the airport, you wouldn't have a business. And they are that they're doing it elsewhere in the country. And I keep bringing them back to our statute, and it doesn't seem to do much good. I point out to them, fees are meant to be commensurate with the amount of the airport that's used. Fees are meant to be consistent across the board. Why aren't you doing that?
You know, and I would say, but for a city, there wouldn't be an airport. You know, you can take that argument in both directions. You did mention, and I just need to clarify, that the car rental companies took upon themselves the additional burden for the new facility. Not actually. When I rent a car, it's very clearly outlined on my bill as a separate expense. They're not picking up any part of it, and in fact, as I mentioned in earlier testimony, it went up 10% in no time from the original number just last year.
Oh, you mean the customer facility charge?
Customer facility charge.
Yeah, absolutely true. Well, I think what I meant to say was that we were the impetus behind this project. I say we because I used to be there, and that they were willing to take the risks associated with a facility charge on what it might do to their business, you know, the elasticity of demand sort of thing, in light of the fact that we had a concession fee of 10%, a tax imposed by the municipality of 8%, and a state tax of 10%. Now you add what amounts to another 7-8% increase in the costs of renting a car, and what does that do to your business? How many people would go elsewhere to rent a car? So there was a risk attendant on this action by the car rental companies, but there's certainly a big benefit. And without Mr. Plum and the airport's cooperation, it never would have happened.
Okay, well, thanks, Mr. Coffey. Any questions for Mr. Coffey? I don't see any. John Torgerson, you on the air?
Office in Anchorage. I have John Steiner, John Barcelo, and Mort Plum here with me.
Okay, I think we heard from some of those people last time, but I'll go ahead with that.
Just if you have questions, mainly that's what we're here for, Mr. Chairman, is if you have questions for us that have not been rehashed or talked about before, I'd be glad to do that.
Okay, we just have one more name here, and it says John Torgerson plus three. Are you the three that we're talking about?
Well, yes. John Steiner is with Department of Law. John Barcelo is the property manager for the airport, and Mort Plum is the director for the Anchorage Airport.
And I got those three. I'm just trying to get hold of John Torgerson. Not on the air?
Speaking. I'm talking to you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thanks. Sorry.
That's all right. No, it's me plus the three.
All right, go ahead. First of all, identification and affiliation.
John Torgerson, Deputy Commissioner for Aviation, Department of Transportation. Mr. Chairman, I'm actually just here to answer questions. We were just handed the amendment. We haven't really had time to look it over and look at the impacts on it, although I understand that it's mainly to take rental cars out of there, and looks like any business that was operating or in existence before January 1, 2006, which Diamond was in operation January of 2004, my understanding. So my quick cursory look, not sure what you're trying to do there, but I will mention that it seems the hot button items are that the airport is reaching out and charging fees for off airport businesses. This bill does not preclude them from doing that. It just stops them from using the gross product or gross revenue as a way of collecting that. And when I hear statements that the bill does not change the fee schedule that the airports put together, and it's not trying to tell the airport how to collect or what to collect. That's really not too true when you read page 2, line 22, where it puts airport parking shuttles into courtesy cars. There is a regulation and a fee structure already set for that, which is one of the lowest at the airport. So other than that, I have no, if you have questions for us, we'd be glad to get you an answer.
Yeah, John, you refer to the courtesy cards. I'm not sure what fees they're paying, do you know?
Guys, Mr. Barsett, what are they paying, John?
Sir, I don't have the fee schedule. I'm sorry, off the top of my head.
Okay, but
I believe the courtesy cars pay. I think it's either $250 or $500 per vehicle. Per year.
So that's just the annual fee of as much as $500. That would put airport parking shuttles in the same category of $500 a year. Does it depend? Do you know if it does it depend on the size of the shuttle? For instance, if you had a Suburban or if you had a regular bus, if they were both called airport shuttle, would
sir,
it?
It depends on the business, really. There are six different classes of ground transportation uses. I think Dr. Mundy, who testified last time, kind of addressed that issue specifically, that there are several different classes of use, and shuttles is just one.
Yeah, well, that's the one I'm referring to, just the classification for shuttle. It says in a document I have, it says $500 for the first vehicle and $50 for each vehicle thereafter per year for an off-airport shuttle. I just didn't know if indeed that $500 was for any size shuttle from a compact car to a bus. Or does it change depending on the volume or the number of passengers that you can put in a shuttle? We don't know. That's all right. It probably doesn't matter because it does say here it's $50 for each one after. They probably have three or four, maybe five shuttles at Diamond. And so their total cost for the year is only $500 plus $250 at the most, or $750 a year, and the original plan from the airport would have raised it from $750 a year to $108,000 a year. And I think that's what caught so much attention. So that's why we have Senate Bill 304 in front of us, as well as Amendment Number 1. And you've mentioned Amendment Number 1. And I think we've probably finished the comments on that. With that, do you have anything else you want to say? Okay, with that, is there anyone in the audience that wants to testify? Is there anyone else online that wants to testify? Okay, we have negatives on both of those. With that, I'll close public testimony. We now have a testimony from the committee. Representative Elkins has already moved Amendment Number 1. Is there an objection to Amendment Number 1? Seeing and hearing no objection, Amendment Number 1 passes. Representative Elkins, any further amendments, or would you like to move the bill?
I'd like to move the bill.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the Senate Bill 304/F with individual recommendations and the zero physical note.
Is there an objection? Seeing and hearing none, the bill passes from committee. With that, we'll go to the next bill, which short-term is Opticoms, long-term is appropriations for Anchorage signal upgrades. And we have before us Representative Gruenberg, who's the bill carrier. Representative Gruenberg, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm here with my legislative assistant, Michael Busey. You heard last time from Deputy Chief Kiewick and Mr. Kniefel from the municipality of Anchorage. And I understand that the Chief Craig Goodrich is on the line now, along with Mr. Kiewick. And let me just be very brief about the bill, and then you could hear from him, and I'll answer questions. You should all have copies of a map of Anchorage showing where these opticoms are and are proposed to be. And there's a big map up here by Representative Salmon. Additional opticoms are now operative. And so as I understand it, the yellow on the map the chief will explain, maybe Mr. Kniefel will explain if he's on the line, but I believe the yellows are now operative. So we are in the process of upgrading these, and what this will do will be to have the system operative so that an emergency fire truck or an ambulance can press a button and the light will turn green, the traffic will clear, and the emergency vehicle will go through quickly and safely. It will save lives and prevent accidents. And with that, I'll be available for questions. You may wish to hear from the chief first.
Okay, John Kiewick, you online?
Yes, I am.
Welcome, John. Is Craig with you?
Yes, he is.
Okay, John, why don't you testified last time, but go ahead and add additional information as you want.
Well, unfortunately, we don't have the map here, so I'm not quite certain what Representative Grunberg was referring to as far as yellow versus
okay. Well, let me
colors.
Let me just give you the briefest description I can. It's quite colorful. It has red dots for no opticom, green dots for signal opticom active, yellow dots for signal opticom inactive, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 other. It's a detail map, and it essentially shows where opticoms are and where we'd like them to be, with a pretty detailed picture of downtown, the couplet. Well, all the way from 3rd all the way out to 7th, with details especially notable on 9th and 15th. And then the north-south streets being I and K and Gamble, Ingra, and Carlock. So I know it's a lot to put in your head at one time, but basically he's referring to the map that simply shows the where they are and where they aren't and where they ought to be.
Okay, well, from where I'm coming from, of course, we'd like them to be everywhere. And we do have some corridors that have been installed, such as Tudor Road. We look forward to other corridors.
John, what I'd like to hear from you is pretty much the decision as to whether or not I know you'd like them. But do you have anything that is quantitative that says, you know, where we had them, we showed a 14% reduction in collisions, or where we had them, we showed no change, and it varied from one location to the other? In other words, a couple of quantitative numbers if you had them.
Mr. Chairman, this is Craig Goodrich.
Go ahead, Craig.
Craig Goodrich, I'm the chief of the Anchorage Fire Department, for the record. And thank you for an opportunity to chat with you. The one story that we might offer, for those of you who are familiar with the fire station in Spinard, that's fire station number 5. We also have fire stations out in the east side of Anchorage. Fire station 6 is at Patterson and DeBar, and station 3 is at Airport Heights between 15th or DeBar and the Glen Highway, right off the airport behind Regional Hospital. Generally speaking, for any type of fires out in the Muldoon area, you send 3 engines and 2 trucks. The trucks have the big ladders on the top. It's quite a run then for any of those companies, particularly from Airport Heights and so forth. Normally takes 6 minutes or so for that station to be second due to station 6, and particularly if the fire happens to be further out in the Chugach Foothill area. With the installation of Opticom along Tudor Road, truck 5 coming from right out by International Airport can beat station 3 into the Chugach Foothill. So I think that's illustrative of a rather dramatic increase in the time that it lends toward the improvement for response. And after all our time, our business is all centered around time. The sooner we get there, whether it's a fire or a medical emergency or otherwise, the more we're going to be able to, the more lives we're going to be able to save, and the more property we're going to be able to save. So for us, that is the primary concern. Secondarily, however, and we don't have the Opticom installed yet for us to make a definitive, quantifiable determination, as you have requested, unfortunately. Mr. Kniefel may have some of those numbers. I know that they were looking at those. But as a practical matter, we are abundantly aware of a problem that we've had for decades, and that is essentially wake turbulence from an aircraft that causes problems for other airplanes when they fly into that wake. For emergency responders, that very same thing is true. The fire engine's going down the road, the sirens are going, the lights are on, and people are trying to get out of the fire engine's way. They'll pull out through intersections into oncoming traffic and get hit. They'll pull sideways and run into a car next to them. They'll stop right in the middle of the road and freeze. There's all kinds of options for them, but what we find that with the Opticom, the people are going with the flow of the traffic, the light turns green, this is all normal for them, they start to proceed down the road, and when they see the engine approaching from the rear, then people can gradually get out of the way. All of that, though, is in the interest of improving time, and it's our concerted opinion that this is a dramatically important piece for the Anchorage Fire Department, and it factors heavily into our short, medium, and long-range master planning. And the long-range master planning spans out 50 years. We look at that and say, if we do not have any definitive change in the way we're doing business, in 50 years, the operating expense for the fire department is going to approach $300 to $350 million. And we have gone all the way back not to 1952 and projected the ratio and the location and response times for fire stations all the way up through 2004. And then we took the 2020 plan, which actually goes through 2025, and ran those projections. That gives you then a 75-year snap line, and you can run a projection beyond that to 2055, and that tells you basically you're going to need X number of people. If we can put in a sprinkler ordinance, if we can put in Opticoms to cut our time down and minimize the response time, then we're able to maximize the efficiency of fire station locations and reduce the sheer volume of fire stations that we need and ambulances and engine companies and all of that sort of stuff, thereby saving the taxpayers a considerable amount of money. We figure it would probably be about 50% of the projected figure if we do nothing. So we're looking for your support then by way of installing Opticoms as broadly as possible.
So I guess, Craig, we're looking at it as a cost-saving measure. Is there any chance that with Opticoms available, that would actually negate the need for the next five fire stations that will be built? Maybe number five wouldn't need to be built because response times are already adequate because of Opticoms? Is that ever a consideration?
Absolutely, it's a consideration, and in fact, it doesn't even go out to maybe the fifth one doesn't need to be built. We're pretty abundantly aware of the fact that we may not help to even build the next one. That does not include, by the way, EMS, but that might be a different looking facility rather than a full built out fire station. But the EMS unit might look more like a residential facility with a kind of a hardened garage facility on it, and we expect that with our run volume, we're going to hit 36,000 this year or very close to that. And the sheer volume of those runs may cause us to have to park some more ambulance out there, but we probably will not need more than one or two fire stations to completely build out all and cover all of the buildable space in the Anchorage Basin.
One more question for you. Each one is $1,100. I guess the information I have is that every single one that you need is already installed. Is that correct?
No, that isn't correct. We actually are looking for other installations. Looking at John.
I'm just looking at their vehicles.
I'm sorry, would you repeat that then?
Yeah, just on the vehicles themselves, the transmitters, every one of those is already installed?
That's correct. We don't have them on the Chugiak units or Girdwood units, but they don't have any optical communications devices in their area at this time.
Okay, and so that leaves just the installation on the traffic lights.
That would be correct. I might add, I may have been incorrect on that. The ambulance in both those locations have optical communications because they have to transit the city, but the engines and the tenders do not.
Okay. Who maintains them after they're installed?
The radio shop at the municipality.
Okay, so they're not in the fire department budget?
That is correct.
That's all the questions I have for you, Craig. I sure appreciate hearing you testify along with John. Anyone else to testify? Very quiet, so I'm assuming not. With that, we'll close public testimony. And we have before us just HB 397, which, just for clarification, is an appropriations bill. Anyone like to... My co-chair, Representative Elkins.
Mr. Chairman, I would move House Bill 397 with individual recommendations and company physical.
And there is an objection from Representative.
No, this is not an objection, Mr. Chairman. I just have a question before we.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
The question is this going to complete all the signals in the Anchorage area?
Good question. Craig or John. Does this bill essentially finish the job?
Well, it comes very close, and the other piece of that, I think, is it doesn't complete 100%, but as other intersection improvements may occur, the optical communications devices are included in those as they're built out.
Okay, and I know it was $1,100 per piece of apparatus. What is it per signal light?
You could round it up to 15,000 per intersection. Some would be a little higher, some would be a little lower, depending on the configuration of the intersection.
Okay, so we could have, you know, even after this is this bill covers the ones that are there, it would only take 150,000 for the next 10 intersections. Do you think there would be 10 or a great deal more than 10?
Well, the state specification for intersections now and the municipal as well requires this technology. So it's sort of built into to all new and or rehabilitated intersections. This is for ones that where there is none existing at this time.
Okay, good point, because when they then bid out a new traffic signal at an intersection, they could certainly include this. Are Opticoms in existence anywhere else in the state?
They've been in operation in Fairbanks for 20 plus years. In Kenai, Soldotna area, in the Valley, and I believe in the Juneau area.
Okay, so actually, it's not just an Anchorage issue, but it does appear to be statewide for all of the major size communities.
Yes.
Thank you. Representative Salmon, did you have another question?
That sounds great.
Oh, okay. He's got an answer. Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Last week, as you know, I had a little ambulance trip. And as I was going from Bartlett in the ambulance to the airport, I asked the guys in the ambulance, do you have Opticoms? And they said, we have them everywhere. We need them in Juneau.
All right.
That's good.
Thank you.
Fine. Any other questions? Representative Elkins?
Let me reintroduce it.
Yeah, HB 397 with individual recommendations, attached physical notes.
Yes.
And it hasn't been amended. So are there objections? Seeing and hearing none, House Bill 397 moves from committee. With that, the meeting is finished, and so we are adjourned.